Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We have been consumed of late with some very interesting, if difficult to understand, developments, notably involving Russia and the so-called coup that was mounted against Vladimir Putin. We're going to, in the course of this program, have the opportunity to take stock with two of the best minds I know on such matters. The first is J.R. Nyquist. We'll speak later in the program with Brian O'Shea. J.R. Nyquist, better known to his friends, and I'm proud to consider myself one of them, as Jeff, is the proprietor of a terrific blog. It is called the jrnyquist.blog. He is also the author of a number of important books, including The Origins of the Fourth World War, could hardly be more topical at the moment, and also The Fool and His Enemy. He is a member of our Committee on the Present Danger, China, and is featured in our most recent webinar, in which we talk about the No Limits Partnership and what we are to make of recent developments, both in Russia and in Cuba at China's hands. Jeff, it's great to have you back. Thank you. It's been far too long, and we're so appreciative of having the chance to catch up with you at a time such as this.
Thanks for having me.
So give us your take, Jeff. You study these things extremely carefully. You are one of the best strategic thinkers I know, but also one of the most informed about not just the moment, the present time, and what is happening or what we think is happening, but the history that preceded it. What are we to make of this coup?
Well, it's very interesting. Putin himself gave us, in his speech on Saturday, gave us an allusion, historical allusion to 1917, what they call the February Revolution, old calendar February, where basically the Russian army mutinied in the middle of World War I, and it started in St. Petersburg, and it spread, it became contagious, and the Tsar had to abdicate. And this is a thing. You've got a country that's suffering in a war. Now, the Russian people aren't suffering, but the army is definitely suffering. And what you have is you have a mutiny of a part of that army, the Wagner mercenary group, and it's a very unusual. This is almost something out of the English Civil War, right? The War of the Roses. Some general decides he's going to march against the king. And so what do we make of this? Well, there's a whole bunch of people out there with theories. And there's the way this came out is we don't know. And I'm going to paraphrase somebody never make predictions, especially about the future. But with Russia, it's you can't even tell the past. You don't even know what the past is going to be. So that's an old joke about the Soviet Union. But the situation here is, from what we can tell, is that a group of mercenaries claiming to be about 25,000 strong, though they may not have been that strong, basically captured the city of Rostov and the headquarters of the southern military district. Then marched on Moscow on Saturday, and basically when they were approaching Moscow, some kind of negotiation took place, and they turned around and returned to barracks or returned to their camps after Putin had given a speech, and then by some accounts fled Moscow. The speech was, this is mutiny, this is treason, and then boom, in the afternoon, it's like, we're going to forgive everybody, go home. And now, of course, Putin just made a speech today saying that they're going to punish the ringleaders. They don't want to punish the soldiers that were misled into the rebellion. Very bizarre. But you have to remember, by many accounts, Russia is losing the war in Ukraine. And this is historical to Russia, the 1905 revolution, when they lost the Russo-Japanese War. In World War I, the February Revolution, countries, regimes like this, in countries like this, this is something that happens. So we have to look at history. But this is so bizarre for a number of reasons that is alarming. There was Yuri Felchinsky had said months ago, before Moscow made the announcement, that Russia was moving nuclear weapons, was going to move nuclear weapons into Belarus. And when that
and who is
came,
Yuri?
Yuri Felchinsky is a Russian historian and writer, a guy that helped has helped people to try to understand this regime, Putin. And he does not live in Russia anymore. He is a dissident. But he has sources over there. And he claimed his sources told him that Russia was going to move nuclear weapons into Belarus. And, of course, surprisingly, everybody thought, sister rumor. But it was true, because I think it was late March. The Moscow announced they were going to move tactical nuclear weapons into Belarus. And so then Felchinsky says, well, you know, there's some kind of scheme where some renegade group gets a hold of these weapons and uses them on Lithuania and Poland in July, right? Around July, because the weapons were supposed to be moved to Belarus by July 1st. Now, this is really weird, because when you have this uprising against Putin, you suddenly have the intervention of the president of Belarus, President Lukashenko. And then you've got this thing that Mr. Prigozhin, the leader of the rebellion, is going to go there. And now today in Putin's speech that he's giving the soldiers of the Wagner group that revolted the option to go to Belarus, right? Which is doubly bizarre. So then you're going to get these renegade soldiers and their leader going to Belarus, where nuclear weapons are being moved. And on the 11th of July, there's this, the NATO summit in Lithuania, in Vilnius, Lithuania. And it's like, you know, it's so bizarre. It's such a crazy thing. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but it goes through my mind, because these are kind of coincidences.
You know? Well, as they say in Soviet communist era, at least, and I think probably still today, as you know so well, it's no accident, comrade, is a turn of phrase. So yeah. does all this make sense as a prelude to the unauthorized use of nuclear weapons against a NATO country? Not Ukraine, by the way, but a NATO country. That's a chilling thought, and it does seem beyond the pale, except stranger things have happened, have they not?
Well, what this, if something like that, I mean, everything has been so weird and crazy. You know, you've got helicopter gunships attacking Russian troops marching on Moscow, getting shot down, all this drama that's really, and of course, it's very riveting, but it provides an alibi for Mr. Putin if the Wagner group goes off and does something else crazy. And so these people are not arrested. They're not rounded up. They're not butchered by the Russian army. They're kind of allowed to do this. There's a lot of questions here. You know, and there's another, I mean, my natural way of analyzing this would be to say, you know, Russia's losing a war, so maybe Prigozhin is fronting for other Russian generals and commanders who are dissatisfied with the way the war is going. They want the change in leadership in the Ministry of Defense, or they want the president replaced. And then that's what's behind it. There's another interpretation. You could say there's some Russian generals that know that this movement of nuclear weapons into Belarus is dangerous, that NATO could preemptively strike if they start to do certain things. And maybe the Belarusian military has gotten together with them. They have not been cooperative with Russia in this war entirely. They did allow Russia to use their territory, but they wouldn't enter the war. In fact, the defense minister of Belarus resigned when...
Hold this thought, Jeff. We have to take just a short break. We'll be right back with more with Jeff Nyquist.
All right.
Right after this. Stay tuned. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. On Sunday's edition of Meet the Press, Secretary of State Antony Blinken was directly asked, quote, are we going to prevent China from having a military base on the island of Cuba, unquote. Blinken's word salad response amounted to an assurance that, quote, we've made clear that this is a real concern, unquote. In short, the Biden administration intends to take no action to prevent the Chinese Communist Party from establishing not just an expanded intelligence and advanced cyber warfare facility in Cuba, but a so-called military training base inherently capable of kinetic power projection as well. Our Committee on the Present Danger China believes that is a totally unacceptable response and will be unveiling in a webinar today at 1 p.m. Eastern Time 20 specific actions the United States must take immediately to counter this new Chinese dagger pointed at the heart of America. Register at presentdangerchina.org. This is Frank Affney. We're back, and we are continuing our conversation with J.R. Nyquist, a very, very impressive strategic thinker and intellect on national security matters. You can follow his work at jrnyquist.blog, as well as his output in a variety of periodical literature and book-length essays, including The Fool and His Enemy. Jeff, you were talking about the possibility, unlikely as it seems, that there may be method to the madness here to create a pretext for the use of a tactical nuclear weapon, possibly even against NATO nations, in connection with Putin's efforts to sort of salvage his position in the war in Ukraine, and more generally, establish his tenure, his hold on power, his place in history, what have you. You acknowledge that this seems to be a very improbable explanation for what's going on here, but you were also just beginning to discuss some other explanations that might be operating as well.
Yeah, that's more probable. I mean, we need to entertain threats so that we could maybe be ready for them. We don't want to be caught off guard. I mean, Hannah Arendt said that totalitarian regimes do crazy things and people don't believe they will do them because they're so crazy, but they do. And that applied to Hitler, Stalin, Mao, and it applies to Mr. Putin. Many people didn't believe he was going to invade Ukraine, that it was too crazy. There was nothing for it. But maybe more likely, because if we go to the historical precedents of Russian governments facing revolution in the past, we have to remember the key factor is Russia has done badly in this war. They've invaded a country. They failed to take the capital and wipe out the government. They lost the Battle of Kherson and Kiev, and they suffered that Ukrainian counteroffensive in September, and they're facing one now, a Ukrainian attack. And so it doesn't look good for them. And so what do you do when it doesn't look good? You have disgruntled elements in the army, disgruntled generals. We had an attempted revolt against Hitler by his generals in the July 20 plot. So we've got a lot of history here that generals can begin intrigues against the commander-in-chief. And here we have a general who, it may not be that he's crazy and did it on his own. It may be that he's expressing the dissatisfaction in a demonstration to Putin and the government that, hey, we don't like this. You have to make a change and you're not listening to us.
Yeah.
And that maybe some of the
change,
generals, yeah.
The change may be in the direction of an intensified effort in Ukraine.
Yeah, well, not given the rhetoric that Mr. Prigozhin was saying, because when Mr. Prigozhin started this revolt, this mutiny, he said that the rationale for the war was a lie. He said there was no threat from NATO on Russia. He said there were no Nazis to put down in Ukraine. You know, he went through all of the justifications that Putin has used. So you are not, you know, this is quite a shift from the way that Mr. Prigozhin has talked in the past. He has gone from being a hardliner to actually taking the Ukrainian point of view. and the point of view of maybe many soldiers in the Russian army who know that this war is wrong, that they've been lied to, that the Ukrainian people aren't being liberated, right? Because the one thing the Russian soldier there in Ukraine knows is that that the Ukrainians are fighting hard, and the Ukrainian people don't appreciate the invasion.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
That's for sure. And so I guess, Jeff, to wrap this up, there may be multiple explanations for what is afoot here. Is it your judgment that they have weakened Vladimir Putin? We're going to hear from Brian O'Shea shortly with a rather different take on this. But
yeah,
what is your general reading on the condition of his regime?
You see, this is why I don't believe it's a provocation. I don't generally credit it, you know, to say that Prigozhin did this to draw out other commanders who would then show their true colors and they would be arrested. I don't believe that because it's too dangerous a thing to do. When you're losing a war, you do not want to make it look like your regime has military units defecting and going against the government, because that might cause an avalanche. There might have been another general, two or three, that would have openly joined in Prigozhin's march on Moscow. Then it would be all over. You know, the way you do a provocation is it's quiet, and you don't allow it to become a contagious psychological, you know, thing where all of a sudden everybody gets up all at once and decides to join it. It's much too dangerous as a provocation. I think that it's more likely that there's these dissatisfied elements, and they don't want to destroy the Russian state. They don't want Putin to be killed. They don't want to disrupt the country, but they want to have Putin listen, and they want to knock him down a peg, and they maybe want peace in the war. They want the war to be run different. Maybe they want negotiations in the war. Maybe they want to stop planned use of a tactical nuclear weapon. That could be a reason. Because if you're losing a war, adding nukes to the bargain is not going to give you a victory.
Yeah, or an end-of-war arrangement that will suit you, that's for sure. Let me ask you about one other question, and we've only got 2 minutes or so to get into it, but your thoughts on China are very important as well. How do they see what's happening here, do you think, in Beijing? As you've described it, I think, Jeff, Putin is very much the junior partner in this no limits partnership. Do you think that the Chinese would be content to see him replaced with somebody of firmer stuff?
Yeah, the Chinese can't be happy with this, because what China needs, Russia. China needs their technology. China needs that huge country buffering them on their backside. They need the distraction in Europe. They might even, except for what it does to world food prices, they might even like that Russia's in this war and NATO's distracted from the Pacific. They may like all of those things.
I think that's a given.
But the one thing they don't want is Russia to collapse and become a normal Western-style country with maybe someone like Navalny in charge of it. They do not want that. And then they would have, you know, let's say the Eastern Military District went over to an anti-Putin, anti-Chinese regime. Then China would have an enemy on its northern border. They wouldn't only have India in the south, they'd have Russia to the north, and they would have Taiwan and Japan and the United States. China would be strategically in a terrible position. So China needs Russia to survive.
But does it need Putin to survive, I guess, is the question. And presumably they would have alternatives to him that they would be.
Yeah, I would really be thinking that Putin is wounded by this, because his authority has been questioned. And now he's trying to backtrack and say he's going to arrest the ringleaders and kill them. But the very moment of weakness, where Moscow was basically only defended by police and an army with a motorized column 105 miles long was speeding towards the capital, and nothing that the government could throw at him could stop them. And where was the army? Where was Gerasimov? Where was Shoigu, the Ministry of Defense people? Where were they? The government was going to flee Moscow, you know?
Well, there were reports that Putin actually fled the Kremlin, for sure.
Right. You know? Yeah. Right. And so this is shaken his authority, shaken his credibility as a leader. And it's I think it's put the generals in a stronger position in the government, in the system. And China can't like that because China's a communist system. It wants the KGB people. That was the armed detachment of the Communist Party was the KGB. And that's Putin and his friend Petrushev and the other Siloviki. That's who they are. That's why they're aligned with China and they're helping Cuba. And they're working with China in Latin America, helping the communists. So, no, it's really damaging. And China's got to be worried sick about it.
Fascinating insight, though, that they would not have somebody elsewhere in the system, at least among the generals who might be the beneficiaries of all of this, that they would favor coming to power in Putin's stead. Jeff, as always, you are a font of interesting ideas. We will be exploring them further with you and others in the days to come and watching closely what comes of all of it. God bless you, my friend. Keep up the good work. And thanks especially for jrnyquist.blog. Thanks to all of you for staying tuned for our next guest. We'll be talking with Bill Marshall about some very interesting developments here at home. Stay tuned.
Destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and I'm very pleased to say we're joined by Bill Marshall, a man of considerable experience, both in the public and private sector, in investigations. In fact, today he is the chief investigator for an indispensable organization, Judicial Watch. And we always are delighted to catch up with Bill to take stock both of the important work that Judicial Watch is doing, but also to draw on his talents and expertise and insights on a whole host of other important issues that we need to be paying attention to ourselves. Bill, thank you for joining us once again. Welcome back.
Thank you, Frank. It's good to be back.
I wanted to ask you first, Bill, about some extraordinary information that has come to light as a result of, I believe, IRS whistleblowers who have provided to the Congress and subsequently had made public a WhatsApp message from Hunter Biden to one of his Chinese partners, who happens to have been a former very senior member of Chinese intelligence, in which he talks about the Chinese not having come through on a promised transfer of funds. Tell us about this document and what it suggests about the relationship between not just Hunter and very problematic Chinese nationals, but also his father as well.
Yes, this conversation apparently occurred. While Joe Biden was still vice president, Hunter made this. This was on his laptop, by the way. Now, bear in mind that the FBI has had possession of this laptop since at least 2019. It was about a year before it became public knowledge that it was out there, right? And this message was on there. This WhatsApp message, and the laptop, of course, is an incredible treasure trove of incriminating information implicating Hunter Biden in so many felonies, I believe, and I think any fair-minded federal investigator would conclude, in terms of human trafficking, illegal drug use, public corruption, money laundering, everything, right? This is a whole, there's also talk of child pornography being on there, but, you know, we haven't seen obviously all the evidence that's out there, but yeah, there's this message on his laptop, this WhatsApp message indicating that he's in a meeting with his father. Here he's in the presence of his father, and Hunter makes this threat essentially to this senior, as you say, senior Chinese official, that if the Chinese official doesn't come through with some kind of commitment he has made, which I think every fair-minded person would presume to be money, a payment of some sort, then the Chinese official will regret this. In fact, he says, Hunter says in there, you know, I hold a grudge forever. And my father, everyone my father knows will be made aware of this, of your failure to proceed with this agreed upon transaction. And then several days later, we learned that, I believe it was from an SAR, suspicious activity report, that a multi-million-dollar payment was made to the Biden family. And they used something like 20 different shell companies for their various payments. You know, we have not only the Chinese making payments. Of course, you had the wife of the mayor of Moscow, Elena Baturina, who made a $3.5 million payment to Hunter Biden for services undetermined. Then you have, of course, Burisma. You have two $5 million payments. Reportedly, this is based on the FBI 1023 form. This is this contact report or human source report in which a confidential human source told the FBI, yeah, Hunter got $5 million and Joe got $5 million, and it was, you know, laundered through various conduits. It's just a staggering amount of incriminating information that should have landed, I think, Hunter Biden in prison for many years, and Joe as well, frankly.
Well, and this is the point of the conversation, really, is this is information that has come to light subsequent to Hunter copping a plea deal that essentially gets him out of jail for free, and it remains to be seen. I definitely appreciate your thoughts on this, whether that is the end of federal investigation and pursuit of his wrongdoing, or whether, as the U.S. attorney seems to suggest, his investigation is ongoing. And this would be a travesty of the first order. I mean, the whole thing stinks to high heavens of, you know, manipulation and political interference and, you know, unequal justice under the law, of course. But the idea that he would walk on this evidence of, and again, for me, Bill, this is from a national security point of view, not just about corruption. This is about betraying our country.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Absolutely. We have the most compromised president, what has to be the most compromised president in the history of this country. You're aware, of course, of Gary Shapley. This is the senior IRS agent, supervisory agent. I believe he was an assistant special agent in charge of one of the IRS offices, who was leading the investigation for years into Hunter Biden. And he became
5 years, I think.
Yes. Right. And he became one of the whistleblowers who very bravely came forward. I mean, I understand, as a former government employee, and you do as well, the risks that a government employee takes when he chooses to go there with the whistleblower route. It never ends well for them. All right. But he wasn't even made aware of the separate FBI report, this 1023 report of the two $5 million payments. So this is, that in itself is shocking. He was shocked to learn of the FBI report, the confidential human source report. I mean, he's looking at Hunter's other crimes, you know, the failure to report $8.6 million, you know, in income for many years. Now, a lot of this has now come out thanks to, you know, the work of James Comer and his work of, I believe, Jason Smith, who's, I believe, the head of the House
Ways and Means. I think
it's Ways and Means, right? Then you have the Oversight Committee, right? And these guys, to their credit, you know, we've got to give credit where credit is due. A lot of, you know, a lot of us on our sort of side of the aisle have been very critical of Kevin McCarthy and Republicans generally in not pushing back. But this is critical. It was critical that we got the House, we got control of the House, and that we're able to force at least some of these records out and get whistleblowers to come forward. And thank God we have those people.
But let me just ask you, and again, our guest is Bill Marshall of Judicial Watch. As you watch this playing out, Bill, what are the chances that there will be, as a result of those congressional investigations and the evidence that they're bringing to light and these whistleblowers and, you know, a further examination of the laptop and other sources of evidence, that there will be, in fact, some measure of accountability for the Biden crime syndicate? I don't know how else to describe it. Or are they likely to get off essentially scot-free?
Well, what's really stunning to me as a federal, as a former federal law enforcement agency employee, is the brazenness of the corruption at the DOJ and FBI and frankly the IRS to cover up the crimes of this most criminal political family. So I have frankly little hope that we're going to see any kind of real justice brought and accountability brought to Hunter Biden and his father. All we can really, the best we can hope for is that we have a somewhat clean election in 2024. And I've become a bit cynical maybe following the 2022 fiasco or 2020 fiasco rather. But maybe the best we can hope for is that we have a clean election in 2024 and enough of this information makes it around the censors at YouTube and Facebook and Instagram and whatever, all the social media platforms, makes it permeates like the Yol Samizdat in the Soviet Union, gets to the people, and that we have a clean election, hopefully, and that we see at the election and we see at the voting booth,
The accountability takes place.
Accountability, because I don't see our justice. Our justice system's utterly failed. Failed. Maybe.
Well, I got to tell you, I think that the election integrity processes of our government have failed as well. And this makes all the more troubling the prospect that that's the only recourse that we may have. And I guess, I just want to leave the audience with some hope here, Bill, as you and Judicial Watch have demonstrated time and time and time again, an ability to enlist the power of the U.S. judiciary to expose and hold accountable people that the government hasn't wanted to, have in the hard light of public examination. I'm prayerful that as you continue to do what you guys do so well under Tom Fitton's leadership, Chris Farrell, of course, our great friend, as well as your own leadership, that we will see federal judges stepping in some way, shape, or form to effect this equal justice under law, even if the Justice Department, even if the FBI, even for that matter, if the Congress is unable to achieve what needs to be done here. But I sure hope we don't have to rely on a free and fair election in 2024, because while I pray for it every day, I'm not sure it's in the offing. Bill, we have to leave it at that for the moment. I appreciate your time as well as your expertise and the great work that you and your team do at Judicial Watch. Come back to us with updates on all of this, if you would. Meantime, stay well, my friend. We'll be right back with more with Dr. Stephen. We'll be right back with more right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. On Sunday's edition of Meet the Press, Secretary of State Antony Blinken was directly asked, quote, "Are we going to prevent China from having a military base on the island of Cuba?" Unquote. Blinken's word salad response amounted to an assurance that, quote, "we've made clear that this is a real concern," unquote. In short, the Biden administration intends to take no action to prevent the Chinese Communist Party from establishing not just an expanded intelligence and advanced cyber warfare facility in Cuba, but a so-called military training base inherently capable of kinetic power projection as well. Our Committee on the Present Danger of China believes that is a totally unacceptable response and will be unveiling in a webinar today at 1 p.m. Eastern Time 20 specific actions the United States must take immediately to counter this new Chinese dagger pointed at the heart of America. Register at presentdangerchina.org. This is Frank Affney. We're back, and I'm always delighted to be able to say we are joined by Brian O'Shea. He's a man who has served his country with distinction as a Special Forces Intelligence Officer. He's also been a man these days working as a private intelligence consultant. He has a new column at Daily Clout entitled Mostly Peaceful, which I think is a wonderful title and certainly fits the bill in terms of the kind of work that he has been covering and engaged in for many, many years. Naomi Wolf is his wife, the proprietress of the Daily Clout, and a great friend and valued colleague as well. We're always delighted to have either of them or both visiting with us. And Brian, welcome. It's your turn today. Thank you for joining us. Great to see you again.
Great to see you, and thanks for having me.
A lot to talk about in the mostly peaceful arena at the moment. We've been talking for the past 2 days about developments in Russia and what we are to make of them. You have some interesting thoughts on the subject. Please share them with our audience.
Sure. And I know as much as anyone else, and so I'm hoping my years of analysis kicked in here. But when I first saw this quote-unquote coup, me and my friends were texting back and forth saying, what's going on in the White House right now? Oh, you know, that impeachment thing for Boebert went through on the same day, to name a few things, as well as a kind of undermining of the Roe versus Wade decision. Besides that point, what I believe that whole thing was about was A, detecting disloyalty in the Russian ranks of the military. And I also believe that whether wittingly or unwittingly, it's a very classic covert influence move to, if you want to undermine the morale of the Ukrainian forces, you let them believe they're getting this, little gap of air, this little, this weak point in the Russian army, and then you dash it all away. So it's like picking someone's morale up and just letting it drop. And so that could be just a byproduct of this run for Moscow, but that's a play I've seen many times, mainly with the Chinese Communist Party.
Well, we're going to come to them in just a moment. Brian, one of the things that seems to have emerged from all of this, and I can't disagree with, your conjectures here, but evidence that Putin is not the omnipotent czar that he has prided himself on being for decades now in the Kremlin. What is your assessment of the possible unintended consequences of this operation, if that's in fact what it was?
Well, I think the unintended consequences are that of perception. So here in the West, we are going to see a lot of headlines that say he's not the omnipotent God, he's not the great leader, but we're not seeing the headlines within Russia, and they control that media. Whereas I see it as, knowing the Russian media as I do, I see this being played by their propaganda machine as, look at this, I even used my charisma to stop a you know, insurrection or a coup without firing a bullet. And so I think this, if Putin spins this right, and I'm sure he will, this will make him possibly even more powerful within Russia.
We'll be following this closely. Let's turn to China. You have been studying them for some time as well. And I think one of the things I value about you is your ability to see how individual dots do connect, or at least may, based on the limited knowledge that we have. Tony Blinken, of course, made a spectacle of himself during his visit to Beijing last week. Is it your sense that we're looking at a China that is further emboldened by the evident weakness of the United States, but possibly somewhat less confident in its no limits partner, Putin? Or do you think this is going according to their plan as well?
I mean, I would just say that China seems to always know about 12 moves ahead what they are going to do. It does seem to me that Putin, for the last 12 years, has never really made any major moves without Xi Jinping's permission. And so when I see... Including into Ukraine. And, you know, and I would also say this about, you know, Ukraine and the Chinese Communist Party. People forget that Ukraine is part of the Belt and Road, and that China, Russia, and Ukraine were building a pipeline as well. So God only knows, but I think China knows exactly what they wanted out of that. And it could have been just to weaken Russia a little. It could have been to break the morale of the Ukrainians. Who knows? But I'm glad you bring this up, because as that's happening, we see the noose tightening, in my opinion, around the United States. We have a new Cuban cyber crisis, for lack of a better term, a base being set up on Cuba that will be dedicated to cyber operations. I forgot how they phrased it. And I'm also seeing the propaganda come out of organizations like China.org, reassuring the world that China only wants what's best for the world and is not bellicose in any way. And I very adolescently...
Trust us.
And yeah, I very adolescently responded to them last night on Twitter. And I said, I speak that language too, and we see right through it.
Brian, let me just ask you, against the backdrop of what Beijing is up to and 12 moves and all of that, we've had this revelation that Hunter Biden conveyed in a WhatsApp text message to a guy who was a former top Chinese intelligence officer, who happens to be his partner in an enterprise here in the United States, that he was sitting next to his dad, and they were irked that some transaction that had been promised hadn't taken place, presumably money. Several days later, several million dollars appeared in their bank accounts, albeit aptly concealed. This is so problematic on so many different levels, and I have to take a short break here, but when we come back, I want to ask you about, as a guy who has taken national security very seriously throughout your life and dealt extensively with highly classified information and the like, what are the implications of this kind of relationship between the commander-in-chief and our mortal enemy, the Chinese Communist Party? Be right back with that and more with Brian O'Shea right after this. We're back, and we are joined by Brian O'Shea, a man with experience both in government, on the special forces side, as well as in the private sector, with trying to ferret out the truth that people don't want us to know and be able to ensure that we can act properly upon it. Brian, we were talking just before the break about this latest revelation, and it's just another item in the bill of particulars involving Hunter Biden, yes, but also Joe Biden, suggesting, well, they say compromise, but I think it's worse than that by far. It's capture, I think, to use the Chinese term, elite capture, shown in this WhatsApp message. Give us your read on both what we now know and what it means for the security of the United States as you see it.
Well, yeah, that's a great question. What it means for the security of the United States is we don't know how deep this goes. Now, we have to remember that Hunter Biden is a drug addict, allegedly. And he's going to do erratic things like forget a laptop, those sort of things. And anyone who's ever worked in recovery or, you know, helping people like that, they're all over the map. They don't remember half the things they do, and they're very erratic and quick to anger. What I really fear with this is as good as it gets because this was released. That means the stuff that has not been released, when taken in the context of 1,800 boxes of classified documents at the Biden residence and in Chinatown, they're everywhere. They must know so much of what's going on. That means they're going to the Chinese Communist Party. Not only can guess 12 moves ahead, they know 12 moves ahead that we're going to make. So we have to really just almost rewrite doctrine at this point for national security to get back in front and of, you know, the Chinese Communist Party, as well as take away their ace in the hole, which is they can see our whole deck.
Yeah. Well, take away the ace in the hole is a controlled asset, as our friend Sam Faddis says. You know, it's not just knowing the moves, it's being able to call the plays, in fact, by having that kind of influence and control over Joe Biden. And again, I it goes without saying, I guess, but for a man who's got your kind of background in these matters, this must be just absolutely infuriating to think that so much is being compromised and or has already been exposed to our enemy in ways that can translate into, you know, the loss of life or the loss of a country even.
Well, and yeah, I mean, that it's ridiculously infuriating. First of all, when I was going through training, the first thing they teach you is about handling of classified documents. I got in trouble. I got detained. I got interrogated because I had a sticky note that I had marked as classified that had my grocery list on it. And it just happened to get stuck to my book as I left my training area. And that was an all afternoon affair. And these people are just throwing it to the wind. But it's infuriating as well, because think of all of the former colleagues and current friends that are, you know, running assets, not only in, you know, no one's really running assets in China, but, you know, in Taiwan and Hong Kong, all across Southeast Asia, all across the world, that are now compromised. I mean, these people hopefully can get back, but even if they do, even when they do, hopefully, we're blind now, because anyone running, you know, for instance, the CIA needs to pull these people back now. Otherwise, we're going to lose them and protect the assets that they have recruited.
Yeah. And we have lost, as you say, the assets we had in China due to similar kind of sloppiness in the past. Brian, so much more we could talk about on that score, but we'll defer for another day on it. I did want to ask you about one other thing. You and your wife, Naomi Wolf, have done incalculably important work on trying to assess the impact of the COVID-19, so-called SARS-CoV-2 virus, and the vaccine that was supposed to protect us against it. It's just impossible to overstate the value of the work that Daily Cloud has done, much of it with our friends in Steve Bannon's War Room Posse, exposing, not least the Pfizer documents. One thing that just is increasingly of concern to me is the people who brought us so much of that travesty of not just the vaccines that turned out to be more dangerous than the disease they were supposed to prevent, but also the lockdowns and the digital IDs and all the rest of it. Well, the Chinese communists in no small measure, but also the World Health Organization, an international organization that the Chinese run, basically, and, you know, others as well, in what seems increasingly to be a kind of international organization warfare against our sovereign nation and the freedoms that we hold dear. And I think you've called it regulatory warfare as well, that is converging in a way that is really dangerous for freedom as we've known it and loved it. Give us just a minute and a half on that, if you would, quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like the Chinese Communist Party through the WHO, and because they pretty much control the WHO, and now, as I understand, Kim Jong-un is on the executive board. So these, for instance, with One Health, that system of laws, rules, you know, how to carry out things in a global pandemic, which if the vote goes through next year, the WHO can declare a global health emergency. God knows what that means.
For humans, plants, or animals, no less.
Any reason that for, you know, food contamination, for environmental racism, whatever that is. And so the
gun violence.
Gun violence is one of them, because it's all connected. I mean, it's this, anyways, but I could go on that. But the thing is, let's just look at One Health. This kicks in automatically in a global health emergency. And they don't have to, you know, no one has to invade us to subvert our constitution. It's pre-installed. It's at the county level in so many counties, states, everything.
And they work for the Chinese Communist Party, no less. Yes. Brian, we're out of time. Come back to us soon, if you would. In the meantime, keep up the great work you do at the Daily Cloud and elsewhere. And my love to your wife. Hope the rest of you will join us again next time for more. Until then, go forth and multiply.